And welcome back. So tonight's episode is brought to you by the Mohawk Bingo on the 138. And for those of you who are just tuning in, this is Our Voices, and we're in episode 7. These past 2 weeks, we were on a little bit of a vacation, so we ran some reruns. But this week, we have a brand new episode. And in studio with us, we have Tanrisu White and Dave McCumber. And so I want to welcome you guys here tonight. And tonight's conversation that I want us to focus on is this whole idea of the environment, because it's something that's really kind of at the forefront in our world right now. You know, whether you're turning on the television, whether you're on Facebook, picking up magazines and things, climate change, the environment, there's so much that's happening. And before jumping into all of that, I'd like to ask Tanrisu, you've been working a really long time in with the environment, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And so I would like to ask, like, what got you into it? Like, what was the gauge that pulled you into that direction to work in that field?
Well, aside from when I got involved with the Longhouse, which was really not that long ago, I had always been, you know, there on occasion, but once I had learned the language through Ganegaharadiwananirits, I believe that was what really helped me get involved with Zinyongwari Hoda, our ways, and the Ohandungariwadekwa. In fact, when I was a kid, it goes all the way back when I was a kid, I was always outside, always outdoors, and interacting with the natural world. We had the creek in the back, fields everywhere, and I used to be just drawn to and fascinated with everything.
Yeah.
But when I first seen the heard the Ohandungariwadekwa, it was written down and in Jharhansa. And when I saw that, I thought, well, you know, it really validates the values that I carried with me throughout my life. And so I'd have to say that getting back to our culture and our language is something that really can strengthen that connection to wanting to work for a better future, which a lot of people call it, you know, the environment work. We have the Gunawaga Environment Office. My wife, Lynn Jacobs, works there. And it's when we talk about it, it's basically we have a relationship as human beings to live in peaceful coexistence with each other and with the natural world. And that's what our, not just Zinyongwari Hoda, but even just the Ohandungariwadekwa tells us or teaches us.
So for yourself, like, what are some ways, like, over the years that you've, like, this wasn't something you just jumped headfirst into, right? Was it something that you kind of built in over time, or did you just go, like, straight for the sustainable type of living way of being? Like, was there a progression, or did you go cold turkey, you know, to how we live?
That's a good question, because I guess it could be said it's a little bit of both, because over the years, it's been, you know, educating myself and Lynn also through her work. And she was very instrumental in building the first straw bale house here in Kahnawake.
Yeah.
That's on the OCR. And through that project, we thought, well, we want to build a house that's made more in line with our values. And so we looked into many different types of housing, and straw bale is what we decided on. And when we finally were ready to build, we took some workshops. That's the first time I ever had my hands on straw bale, was in a workshop. And then I self-contracted. I built the house myself, and Dave helped out in some of the construction as well, along with some of the students from the Kahnawake Survival School. So
for those who don't know, maybe some of our listeners, maybe our younger listeners or people might be thinking, they have this image in their head when you say straw bale house, right? Like, maybe they might think a Three Little Pigs scenario thing. What is a straw bale house?
Well, a straw bale is it's a very sustainable material. The bales that we got were from St. Timothy, and it's a a native grass to this area. It's a mm-hmm. switchgrass, so it's very sustainable. You're not growing anything that's an invasive plant or introduced, but it's also a material that you can grow maybe twice a year, mm-hmm. cut it, bale it, and instead of cutting down trees that have been around for so many years, it took mm-hmm. so long to grow. But the straw bale itself is a very, very good insulating value. Mm-hmm. It's rated at R40 at one bale. Mm. When you put it all together with the wood and the windows and doors, then they tested it. It comes down to about R27, which is still better than a 2x6 wall with R20 batting in it, which is rated at about R12. So not only is it sustainable in the material, but for economical for heating.
And so are you running off hydro? Do you have solar? Like, how are you doing that?
We looked into a lot of things. We're running on electric. We're on hydro. We would have liked to have been on solar, but all the systems that and the cost that went into the house, we couldn't afford to just go on solar. We did some rough-ins in the roof to accommodate for maybe a future solar hot water panels to heat our water. We could always retrofit maybe a wind turbine or something to that effect. But we also designed our house in a passive solar design, which keeps it cool in the summer and keeps
warm in the winter.
Warm in the winter. Yeah, that's it.
And so how do you feel looking like kind of where we're at today? Like, there's been all of this talk now of climate change is a real big one, right? It's at the forefront. And do you see, like, in our community, do you have a hopeful outlook when you kind of see the way things are going? Like, are we moving fast enough in your view in terms of trying to turn this around, or do we need to do more, like, on an individual and a collective level?
Well, that's a very good question. I think that as individuals, it is, up to us to educate ourselves and to motivate ourselves to do something about it. But it's hard. It's also a hard road to go alone. So I think that it's good for people to come together if they can and explore options, figure out something. Like, that's what, back to Dino Gordi Hoda, we always say, let's put our minds together as one mind. So I think that's the best, is trying to come together. And yeah, I think right now is always a good time to start moving and getting the ball rolling on changing things for the future, because if we wait too long, it's just not going to be it's something that our responsibility towards our children, our grandchildren, we need to fulfill.
Because it always seems kind of like there's this, especially with the Western world kind of capitalist thinking, is this whole idea of the economy versus the environment, right? And so people think, well, we have to really put our energy into the economy because that's what's going to sustain us into the future. But that's kind of what got us into this problem in the first place, right? With the environment.
That's true. In fact, they've been talking about that, building the economy again, and the earth can't sustain just building the economy.
Yeah.
We have to find ways to make it that all the people who are living on the earth now, the things that they need and the things that they want, that it can't be something that's going to continue in the way that it's going now. Like, we have to change the energy we use, the way we do things, the way we build our communities, our roads, everything has to change. And it's not a very easy task to tackle, but I think it's something that we can, if we put our minds together, we can do pretty much anything.
And so I want to pull Dave into this conversation now, because yourself, for the past little while, you've been doing a lot of land-based survival training, correct?
I've been working at it, yeah. And it's certainly a process.
And what pulled you into that direction?
Like Willie said, man, I played outside all the time when I was a kid. And as I got older, I started to, I think, realize more the importance of having a place to play like that, mm-hmm. woods and fields and grass, and understanding at levels what the landscape has to offer us, especially when it comes to being able to survive in the woods, even if it's only for one night, mm-hmm. right? How to recognize materials, how to utilize them. It's an important skill. And it's interesting what you're saying about the economy, because I remember David Suzuki saying that the economy is a false god created by man, and it's going to fail too, just like all the other ones. Mm. So that's an interesting thing. So I think in terms of sustainability, if people get to the point where they're able to take care of themselves more than relying on everybody else to do it for us, then that's a real big step in the right direction.
And it's really kind of taking the blinders off too, right? Because a lot of times we're just kind of focused in on us, right? Humans, what's good for us. But not really looking at the impacts it's having on the vegetation, the animals, the waterways, the everything, right, that's happening around us. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it's gone on so long in this way that we're kind of looking where we're at today globally. And it's something that scientists are crying out. There was that, I think it was maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, those UN scientists put out that kind of warning, kind of a dire warning, right, to the world, saying now's the time. We're kind of warning you again that we really, really need to wake up to this, right?
Well, you got to figure too, every time we buy something, whether it's a truck or a pair of shoes or one of the synthetic shirts that we like to wear, that leaves a big oil footprint because the materials are harvested and they're put on a boat or a train and brought to the ocean and traveling by steamer to Japan or Malaysia or wherever these things are made, and the same process goes over and it's brought back again. That's a lot of fuel to have a nice shirt on.
So what would you guys say to somebody who might be listening in and saying, oh, come on, what do they want us to do? Give up our truck, give up our houses, go back to living in longhouses and going into the horse and buggy. Is that what you want us to do, really?
No.
Because, you know, there's kind of pessimistic people who think in that way, right?
No, I still have my truck and I still live in my house. It's a stick frame with R12 value, I guess. But that's what I knew when I built it, and that's how I exist right now. But I think it's more of an awareness, because we're always told to look after our children and make decisions that are going to have a positive impact on our children. And that's, I think, the direction that needs to be taken at a large level for a lot of people, because we are egocentric. We like to have shiny things and go on vacation and have all of life's, I guess, luxuries as much as possible. And we don't really think about the impact on nature, especially the old thing, pave paradise and put up a parking lot kind of mentality. What are we going to have for our children? Where are they going to play? Mm-hmm. Right? Where are they going to play? It's an important question to be considered.
Tarnis, what would you say to somebody maybe who might be listening in and have that kind of pessimistic thinking of, is that what you want us to do? You know, 'cause I hear it often in the conversations.
Yeah, that's probably a pretty common reaction, because I think it's really difficult to say, okay, we have to change, but not give any examples of how to do it. Mm-hmm. And so that's, and you know, not just one individual has the answer. And so it is good to ask those questions, but I think that it's a matter of looking at yourself, and like Dave said, looking at what it is your values are, looking into what it is, you know, you have children, you have grandchildren, and what do you want to leave for them? Mm-hmm. Do you want to leave them a world that's better off than it is now? Everybody would say yes. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no doubt, but I think that's what, you know, people get worried. People get scared, you know, well, do I have to give up everything? No, I don't think that people have to give up everything. I think that we just have to in my example, you know, I realign myself with traditional values. And that's one of the challenges today, too, is, you know, yeah, we're not going to go back to living in longhouses, but we do need to eat. Mm-hmm. We do have some land. Maybe we could start by feeding ourselves, which is, you know, on an individual basis, people have gardens. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. We also could start talking with your families about, you know, what is it that we could do? Because we have a lot of downtime, it seems. Mm. Even though we're running through our lives always so busy, mm-hmm. we got all the technology that distracts us, you know, where we could be having conversation about something that really is important and very pressing at the moment. So,
just to go back in the what we were talking about earlier, Dave, and what you were mentioning, looking at this land-based survival stuff. So for people who might be looking at it saying, well, what would I get out of that by going learn that? You know, I know on the outside they kind of advertise it as primitive, primitive living. So if somebody was to ask, well, what am I going to get out of that if I go learn that?
I think one of the most important things that would come up is actually appreciating the landscape for what it is, or maybe a brand new respect for it, rather than, geez, look at all those nice trees, but I got a wood stove, so I'm going to cut them down, right? Do selective cutting, maybe, you know, just go after the dead ones and not really worry about 5 years from now and take all the good ones to leave things, because if we don't, then, you know, what are we going to have? It's interesting you're talking about environment office. Well, your mom, Gunadoga, and my wife were instrumental in starting the first one. So I've been around that kind of scenario for a long time too. And I guess at first not by choice, kind of got thrown into it. But you gain respect out of learning how to collect materials to build a bow drill, to build a good fire, a good sustainable fire, how to build a shelter, a debris hut from everything that's laying on a forest floor, and being able to survive rather, well, not too comfortably, but, you know, warm and dry at least for a little while till you can come up with something better for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
and it also gets you more kind of reconnected, right? Back to what are the uses? What are the, you know, the plant life that's out there, the medicines, you know, not just looking at the leaves, but also the roots, you know, everything that can be used with a lot of the plants that are out there.
Well, when you're out there and you're there for a few days, you're looking at foraging for food, burdock root. Not a lot of people eat burdock root anymore. I know some who do. Mm-hmm. Dandelion root, all the bitters that are out there in the landscape to eat that most people frown at and put Roundup on and, you know, kind of pollute our yards with glyphosate that's in this product, which goes into the food chain, which becomes unsustainability, right? So, yeah, just learning about, you know, maybe one plant a year and learning what it does and the kind of benefit it has for you in terms of vitamins and minerals, and why should I be eating this instead of, you know, a bucket of chicken wings and a poutine kind of thing. Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting to think, because I was thinking of a conversation years ago. Somebody had some land here in Kahnawake, and it was swampy, but it was a really well-known area for medicines, you know. And they looked and they says, well, what a waste of space. So they were going to go in, they were going to landfill it. And, you know, people were saying, well, why are you going to landfill it? There's medicines there. The response was, well, I guess you better go pick it then before I do. They landfilled it. And years later, it's just landfilled. There's nothing on that area, you know. So, like, the thinking and what we lose when we just kind of have that disconnect, right? It's really critical and key.
I know since I've been taking courses and I guess involving myself with skills like this is just having a whole new appreciation for a landscape. We used to drive along and look at trees and wonder what kind they are. Not really much going on, but now I'm driving through someplace, I'm there, hey, look at that, look at all the debris in there. I could probably build a nice debris hut or some sort of shelter. And you know, there's a creek running through there. You could dig down a little and make a little fridge, little things that you experience. Kind of rocks are in the creek that I can maybe bust and get a sharp edge if I had to skin a squirrel. And so you learn about these kinds of things as you go, and there's always something new to learn. I wish I would have the energy, I guess, to push myself to the extremes. I know a couple of people are always pushing their limits, but sleeping out in a snow hut in 20 below weather is tough when you're getting older. But certainly to have that, I guess, information base, and right now being able to bring it to the elementary school level with the projects that we're running through, I guess, the education center, plugging the ed center right now, I guess. A few years ago, Tom Scott and Lynn were running a cluster group with the kids in Cattery School, and we're doing basic fire, water, shelter, food. And it went well, and they wanted to do it again, and they did it 3 years in a row, and last year was the first time that this project ran into Grunianuha School and Survival School. And teaching the younger ones at that age what's available in the landscape and how to respect it and how to go about it without damaging it, if not necessary, and learning about themselves. Because when you're out in the woods, you have time to be by yourself, and you learn about yourself and what your capabilities are. And through failing, whether it's building a fire structure or a little bit more complicated along the lines of maybe a bow drill, failure is such a powerful learning tool for them, because they can, in a small group of 10, can figure out together, well, this didn't work, what can we do next? So it also makes them create a bond with their environment and appreciate it.
And also, like you were saying earlier, learning how to depend on each other, right? Which is critical, you know, working collectively, thinking together, how do we depend on each other? For those of you who are just joining in, we have our two guests in tonight, Tanarissa White and Dave McCumber, and we've just been talking about different things concerning the environment, land-based survival, sustainability. And so I just want to jump now into, for those of our listeners who might be maybe starting at square one, say, but they're interested, you know, there's kind of like that interest in them because they're watching the news, they're seeing all of the stories about how we do need to change and we need to start to live sustainably. Where would you kind of encourage them to start? What would be like step one, would you say?
Well, like Dave and I have both been mentioning is actually getting outdoors, getting into the natural world and experiencing it firsthand. Getting to know it and becoming, I think, familiar with our ways and how those values within our culture put us in a place where we're not the only thing here on this earth. You know, I know a lot of people are very concerned about what's going on, and maybe they don't know how to begin, like you said, or don't know how to translate those values into action on an everyday basis. There's a lot of things that can be done. Like, you know, David mentioned about choices. When you do buy something, you can research what the best choices are. Sustainable,
organic.
And even socially, when you buy something that was made in a sweatshop or something, you know, it doesn't do anything for the people who live there. In fact, the places where they live, there's probably they have some of the same problems that they're dealing with.
Yeah,
where they had a indigenous based knowledge. And it's possibly, been suppressed, know. And now I think it's time for, if I can mention one thing, David Suzuki was back in Montreal back in November. Mm-hmm. And he headed a panel that included some people from our own communities, including Ellen Gabriel. Mm. And he mentioned how, you know, all the science that they've been doing over the years to show everybody how much there was a interconnectedness between the natural world and human beings and how we impact that, whether that balance is tipped one way or the other. He said, all this stuff we've been trying to prove, all the indigenous people have known it and have been practicing it for years.
Yeah.
And it took us this long, he said, to realize that. And now the world is looking towards us for guidance.
Yeah.
And one interesting thing that Ellen Gabriel had mentioned, she said, well, you know, it's true. And you know, we have a lot of work ahead of us, and that it's too bad that when we were colonized, that we didn't assimilate you instead, because maybe the way that we value each other and the way we value life itself would be a little bit different,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I think looking back into our ways goes a long way into maybe projecting you forward into the way you would make a decision in your life, because that's what it's for. The Ohandungari Wadeko is there to guide us on our every decision making processes.
Yeah, because it's interesting what you're saying, because when you're thinking about it, you know, a lot of these things that science is quote unquote discovering, this was indigenous knowledge that we've already had. You know, it was just recent. For years, I had said, "Well, when we say Yunkitni Stahadzi Hunzade, our mother, the earth, our cousins, the trees." And you know, when we had this family relationship that we would talk about for years, even I said, "Well, it's just symbolic. It's just, you know, it's a metaphor." But only recently they discovered that no, we're interconnected genetically to every living thing that's on the planet. You know, they found the gene that connects all of us. And depending how closer we are related to each other, the more genes we have in common. But they said there's one common gene that we all have that makes us all related. So you hear that and it just kind of says we had a scientific way of talking about it, but we said it in the language that we described it, right?
Yep.
So Dave, for yourself, how would you suggest for people, what would be step one for somebody who wanted to kind of take that first step forward?
Go outside and play. Yeah, really. We spend a lot of time in front of screens these days, whether it's a handheld one or a television or a computer screen. And, you know, guilty as charged. I spend way too much time doing that. And I think there's a lot of people who could fall under that category. And if we just give ourselves time to go outside and start to do things, you'll start to learn. Excuse me. And once you start learning, and if it's really interesting, you're going to crave more. You're going to want to keep, hey, I wonder what's next. I wonder what else this could be used for. Whether it's, you know, making bark baskets or recognizing the difference between a black ash and a white ash, which is pretty tough for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. And a nice ash.
Well, I don't want to say. I'm glad you said that. And I do. There's a lot of YouTube videos out there too. And, you know, right now wilderness survival is big. There's a lot of schools out there where people are spending a lot of money to go to and learn these skills. And when a person sees something on YouTube, I think that might catch their interest. They don't tell you the whole story. They just show you in 5 or 6 minutes what it's going to look like. But when you start going out there and trying yourself and experimenting and finding out what works and what doesn't, that connection again happens. It just happens all by itself. And somebody said, if you don't go out and use and appreciate the land for what it's worth, then not a lot of people are going to have an interest in saving it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because we're good consumers. We're really good at that. And, you know, when you're talking about buying stuff, I do it. I'm looking at this really nice piece of clothing but I have one at home and it works fine. So you're at a point now where, well, I'm not going to buy it because I have it already, not because it's new and shiny. So I guess decisions like that are important to make at every level, because again, we have to teach our kids, our children rather, and our grandchildren now about, because I have one now, about the importance of that and how connecting with outside. I certainly hope to do my part in that as best I can. So again, working with the grade 5 and 6 students in the elementary school level last year, they were so awesome because no electronics were allowed during this time. They got shut off from the electronic world. and they were forced to only be outside. Yeah, they were forced to only be outside. And when they all came together and worked together and built fires and made their own oatmeal in the morning, which is pretty darn huge for a 10-year-old or 11-year-old to go out there and survive a night, kind of on their own. Yeah, you can see their eyes get big and they're all excited. And it's an experience that they're not going to forget anytime soon and hopefully carry on, because they'll have a new, hopefully gained a new respect for what's really out there.
And as you were talking, explaining all of that, it made me think of our Mi'kmaq friend who teaches the youth the land-based survival stuff and what he had said when he was teaching indigenous youth.
Yeah.
He said he made it clear to them that, he said, when you go on the outside and you learn land-based survival, he said, it's clear that they're teaching you how to survive and get out of the woods. Mm-hmm. He says, what I teach them is how to reconnect back with the forest and to live with it again. He said, because when you think of our old timers a long time ago, it wasn't about survival. It was about living. And he said, and that's a stark difference between who we are. And I think listening to what you guys were both talking about, it's just that, you know, we're not trying to survive. We're trying to live and to live sustainably, you know, and I think that's the key thing that we have to focus on, right? Well, we've run out of time tonight.
Fast, huh?
Yeah, it went quick. And I want to say Nyawa Goa for you guys for coming in and sharing your knowledge. And I also want to say Nyawa Goa to bringing this knowledge forward and being some of the trendsetters, too, of having this knowledge be brought back for our youth, for our community, for our people. It's really encouraging to see yourselves, but also so many others. You know, we mentioned, you mentioned my mother and your wife. You mentioned your wife, Tarnisu, as well. We have so many people within our community who are taking this on, and there is that collective movement happening. And so I just want to give that encouragement out. And also to people who are listening in, like they said, do the research, look at it, and, you know, really dive into it. Dave, you wanted to say one more thing?
Yeah, I think it's important too that there's a lot of people with a lot of knowledge outside of our community that keep coming here and, you know, telling us about things that are out there. Well, I would say there's a lot of knowledge within our community as well. Mm-hmm. And we certainly should look at starting to learn how to value the people who have that kind of knowledge and are willing to share it within our own community. I remember a woman asking once, and it was a real poignant question, was why are people afraid to be who they are in their own community? Mm. This is a real serious question, right? So it's, you know, I guess food for thought that can be put out there, for sure.
Well, Nyawa Goa, guys, for coming in. And that's all the time we have tonight in the discussion portion of our show. Up next, we have Canoe Dance by Art and Lyle. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.